The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We are going to talk a little bit about what to expect on Monday while we are on air. The handover of power happens in the States. Joe Biden will cease to become president and Donald Trump will take over the role. Mark Kerwin is with me. Mark is an Irishman, former Washington DC Metropolitan Police officer as well. Mark, it's good to talk to you again. You've had a role, a direct role in the security of some of these inauguration events before, haven't you?
Yeah, Kieran, I've done five inaugurations. I've worked, I was in the Special Operations Division of Metropolitan Police Department. So we work in conjunction with the U.S. Secret Service and Department of Homeland Security with the security for all the dignitaries and the escorting, and then also any threats, whether they be any serious threats to the city.
And is it a case that there is inevitably some threat and you just have to kind of triage it and decide which is kind of just kind of people trying to get attention and which is serious?
Yeah, well, I suppose we're in a very unique situation because, you know, you're looking at a president-elect coming in who left when he was leaving power the last time, obviously January 6th occurred. You're also looking at somebody who has had two personal hits on him, attempted assassinations. That's the first time ever in the history of the Secret Service and inauguration ever having to protect someone who's had two hits on them, basically, which were unsuccessful. And, you know, you're also looking at New Year's Day in New Orleans, where, you know, you had the person who drove into the people in New Orleans, a lone wolf. That's one of the biggest concerns for all law enforcement, is not so much the likes of the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers on January 6th, but more the likes of a lone wolf coming and attacking. So because of that, you know, we're looking at a city that now has 30 miles of non-scale fencing, 25,000 law enforcement with 4,000 military troops being added, and the sky is basically going to be scoured with drones also, which is, you know, something that has been in the press all over the States recently, with drones being spotted all around the United States and no one owning up to who owns them. So so a major a security detail.
Who's in charge of it all? Is it Secret Service? Is it the local police? Who is it?
No, it's United States Secret Service. So basically what happens is that anytime that you have an event like this of this degree, it's called a National Special Security Event, an NSSE. When an NSSE takes place, that will be under the management of Secret Service with the FBI. And then in this case, the fact that it's in Washington, D.C., Metropolitan Police will also be greatly involved in it.
When you've worked at them then, Mark, I mean, is there a point that you can relax and enjoy the spectacle as much as kind of political speeches can be enjoyed? Or are you on alert through it? Talk me through what that's like.
Oh, absolutely not. From the minute, you know, not just from the day itself, Kieran, it's from the days leading up to it. You know, there's an awful lot of practice and reruns done on potential the worst case scenarios and how to deal with them. So we would be practicing nonstop. We would.
And sorry, Mark, to cut across you. What's worst case? So you say kind of someone driving a car into it is probably the thing you're terrified most of, because it's the easiest thing maybe for someone to do. Access to a car is simple. But what's worst case scenario?
Chemical warfare. You know, somebody who can possibly maybe jam drones, bring in a drone themselves, which has something either chemical or nuclear on board. So, I mean, there's multiple situations which could occur, yeah, which, you know, you have to prepare for. It's not just a lone wolf driving in a vehicle.
And so you guys are preparing for chemical or nuclear attack?
Anything. I mean, that's the thing. Wow. You have to be. It's not just the fact that this particular president has got, you know, a higher security risk. There is no known security threats against Donald Trump, and that was released. So there is no known by the FBI. They released that statement. But it's the what's if, and, you know, you're better looking at it than looking for it. You have to be prepared for everything that could potentially take place. So when you ask, you know, do you ever relax and possibly enjoy, you know, the day, the speeches, the music or whatever? Absolutely not. It's your head is on a swivel all day. You're constantly on edge looking to see what could potentially cause damage or cause harm to the citizens around the city, you know?
Well, listen, not working this one, so maybe you can enjoy it. And perhaps with all of the kind of security you detailed there, things should, one would hope, go off without a hitch. Leo Varadkar is with us as well, former Taoiseach, of course. Leo, thanks a million for taking the time. It's good to talk to you.
Hello. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You met both Joe Biden and Donald Trump as Taoiseach when they were president. How different were they?
But they're very different, both in terms of their characteristics and also their politics. Trump was president for all of my first term as Taoiseach, and Biden during the second term. But I would have met Biden prior to that, you know, in that interim period when Trump was president. So my objective always as Taoiseach, and this has to be the objective of any Taoiseach, is to try and develop a good rapport and a good working relationship with whoever's in the White House. You know, the United States is the most powerful economy in the world, the biggest military power in the world, and it's in Ireland's interests to try and have a good relationship. That doesn't mean agreeing with them all the time, but it definitely means being sensible in how we approach that relationship.
How fine a balance is that to strike? You know, when there's maybe kind of a short term domestic political gain to be had by going there and maybe, you know, having a go at the president if it's someone like Donald Trump.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't advise that. There's, you know, as I often say, leadership isn't about proving to the people who already support you that you're on their side. It's about bringing behind you people who aren't yet. And there's easy publicity and lots of plaudits in being righteous. But I'm not sure what it actually achieves either for you or for the people that you're trying to advocate for. So, I remember Enda Kenny very eloquently raising the issue of migration with Trump on his last trip to the White House, and he did that very well, I think. Certainly on my last trip this year, you know, used the Shamrock Ceremony to talk a lot about the situation in Palestine, and that went around the world. It's often how you do it. I don't think we should ever be afraid to say to our friends and allies things they don't necessarily want to hear, and I would hope they would do the same in reverse, by the way. The question to ask yourself is it about trying to influence, or are you just trying to get likes from people who are back home and are right on about something? That's the fundamental question of foreign policy.
What do you think Joe Biden's legacy is, if you had to describe it?
I was thinking about this, so I don't know how long you have, but I think there really are four parts to it.
Okay.
I think for Ireland, he was hugely helpful on Brexit. You know, in my first term as Taoiseach, when Trump was president, he was hostile to the EU, to the UN, to any kind of multilateral organization, doesn't really like them. Would have been more pro-British, but our objective was to make sure he did us no harm, and in fairness, he didn't. In the second term, though, when I was Taoiseach Taoiseach though with Micheál, with the incoming Taoiseach Micheál Martin, he was hugely helpful. People forget it now, but the US issued a démarche to the UK in the middle of 2020, saying that the UK on Brexit was inflaming tensions with Europe and in Northern Ireland. And, you know, the UK is one of the US's closest allies. You know, British soldiers fight in American wars in Iraq and in Afghanistan, you name it. So for him to do that was very significant. And while London mightn't at least at that time, mightn't always have listened to what we say. They certainly listened to the White House. So we have to be very grateful to President Biden forever in terms of his help for Ireland. I think domestically at home, he has a very positive legacy in the US. If you just think of the kind of things he got through Congress, the US economy is outperforming the UK economy, the EU economy, even the Chinese economy in the past 4 years. Inflation is down, unemployment is low, housing construction is at a 50-year high. And he got a $1 trillion infrastructure investment package through Congress, and also expanded healthcare, expanded Obamacare. If there was a domestic failure, it probably was around the border. Democrats will say that the number of people crossing the US-Mexico border is down 60%. It is, but it's down 60% from a big high, and I think they acted too slowly on that issue, and that was one of the things that cost them the election. On foreign policy, which would be the third thing, much more mixed. He did strengthen the Atlantic Alliance with Europe, expanded NATO, Sweden and Finland joining, was really good, I think, on Ukraine and Russia. You know, let's not forget before Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, they'd taken Crimea, they'd occupied part of Georgia, they'd occupied part of Moldova. He was the first to really stand up to Russian aggression and said, no more of this. And I think that's important. And I don't know what's going to happen next in that regard. We'll see. In contrast, Afghanistan, total mess. I don't think any of us can forget the images of the men clinging onto the American planes as they left Kabul. And of course, the Taliban is back in control of that country. If anybody ever wants to see what an apartheid state looks like, it's Afghanistan. And you know, his popularity rating actually never went above 50% after that. It was seen as a humiliation for America, you know, scrambling out of Afghanistan. And then, of course, on Israel-Palestine, I think probably all of us in Ireland would agree that he could have stood up to Netanyahu in a way he didn't. When the ceasefire proposal was rejected back in May, basically the same one as is being discussed now, he could have stopped offensive weapons being sent to Israel. Other presidents did, like Reagan, for example, and he didn't. And I think that was a failure. He wouldn't see it that way. You know, he will see himself going down in history as the president who was the most supportive of Israel. But that's a different perspective. And in Ireland, we need to understand that other people have different perspectives, and there's a whole history and story behind that. Finally, I think the fourth part is the handover succession. And the essential job of any political leader is to hand over office to one of their own. he didn't manage to do that, unfortunately. Look, maybe if he was the candidate, he would have won the election. Maybe if he'd gone sooner and allowed the Democrats to have a primary, they might have won the election. Who knows? But it's very hard. It'll be very hard, I think, for historians in 20 or 30 years' time to see him as anything other than the president in between two Trump presidencies, rather than the president who defeated Trump.
What have you made of his kind of parting address, particularly this focus on an emerging oligarchy in the States, the broligarchy or the broligarchy, as people are talking about, you know, likening the tech bros, so-called, to the robber barons of previous times?
Yeah, look, it was reminiscent of Eisenhower's farewell speech, you know, when he coined this term military-industrial complex. And I think that's what he was referring to in terms of this political tech complex that could develop. One thing that does occur to me, and, you know, I may not necessarily like it, but, you know, seeing the big turnaround in Meta and the decisions that Meta have taken, one thing it says to me is elections matter. You know, there are a lot of people who believe that corporations control the politicians. This is actually a very good example of the opposite. An election happened in the US, and whatever you may think about the outcome, big business is responding to the outcome of that election. It's not necessarily the other way around, because a lot of the big companies would have been liberal-leaning, Democrat-supporting, probably gave more money to Democrats than the Republicans in recent years. So, you know, that has to be taken into account too. But there's one thing that I absolutely believe is extraordinarily rich people have too much power and too much money, and it's a question of whether they use it for good or not. You know, If you walk around Dublin, not too far from me, there's a Carnegie Library, and Andrew Carnegie at one point, I can't remember when, back in maybe 100 years ago, was the richest man in the world, and he decided to build libraries all over the world. Other rich men don't think that way.
Do you suspect, though, that we are entering a period whereby forces will emerge who want to break up these companies in the same way we saw companies broken up in the past in the United States, you know, Total Oil and things like that?
Yeah, look, I think it's more down to competition. It depends on the industry, of course. What we're seeing, I think, tomorrow or the day after is TikTok being banned in the US, and that is removing, you know, that is removing competition. And it'll be interesting to see how Europe deals with X if X violates our basic principles and rules. So what you initially might see is less competition.
Listen, it's going to be fascinating to watch. One more question just before I let you go, Leo, on Donald Trump. And I mean, we could spend now until 7 o'clock kind of talking about what we might expect over the next 4 years, but he's not even president yet. And we find ourselves talking kind of in circles about Greenland and the Panama Canal and renaming the Gulf of Mexico, the Gulf of America. To what extent is the challenge going to be for all of us over the next 4 years, separating the signal from the noise?
Donald Trump definitely waves a big stick. He doesn't always use it, but it would be a very unwise person to think that he wouldn't. So I think it's a case of being prepared, prepare for the worst, hope for the best. This will be a different Trump presidency. He has a real mandate now, won the popular vote, albeit only by 1.5%. It was that tight in the end. Also has control of the House, the Senate, a conservative Supreme Court, which he largely appointed. And this time his cabinet isn't Republican grandees. It's very much his people, MAGA people. So he has enormous power for the next 2 years, very few constraints. Whatever we do, we need to be wise to that.
Yeah, strap in for the ride. Listen, thank you very much for joining us. Leo Varadkar, former Taoiseach. Mark Kerwin, we spoke to beforehand, the Irishman, former Washington DC Metropolitan Police officer who has worked at, was it six different inaugurations, not working on Monday. I'm going to watch it on the TV.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.